Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well, what tips do they have for you and I, and I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential.
Hi everyone, it's your girl Jaya from Potential HQ. Three things make me happy: my dog, my cat, and weekend food crawls. Happy first birthday to the Potential Psychology Podcast.
Hi, I'm Andy. I'm the producer of the Potential Psychology Podcast. What makes me happy? My beautiful partner, my wonderful family, my hilarious cat, and the three others that I'm currently looking after at the moment, and being able to live out my purpose, which I believe is to help others. That's what makes me happy. Congratulations on the first anniversary of the Potential Psychology Podcast, Ellen.
Welcome to this very special episode of the Potential Psychology Podcast, in which we're celebrating the International Day of Happiness, which is today, 20th of March, and the Potential Psychology Podcast's first birthday, which is officially tomorrow, the 21st of March. Happy birthday to us. So what is the International Day of Happiness? Since 2013, the United Nations has celebrated the International Day of Happiness as a way to recognise the importance of happiness to the lives of people around the world. And this year, the theme for the International Day of Happiness is Happier Together. And I thought, what better way to celebrate being happier together, and both our birthday and the International Day of Happiness, than to get our audience and our past guests and the Potential Psychology team involved and ask the question, what makes you happy, so that we can be happier together. We've heard from Jay and from Andy, my indispensable team here at the podcast, and in the spirit of celebration, I want to acknowledge up front their fantastic help and contribution in putting this podcast together with me each week. I could not do it without them. I'm very lucky to have found them both just a little over a year ago. And next up, I want to thank you, not only for being here and listening in, but for all of the messages and emails and reviews and your support of the podcast over our first four seasons and full year. It has been an absolute ripper of a year, and none of that would be worth anything if it wasn't for you listening in and spreading the word. So thank you. Now, throughout our first year, we've explored well-being, performance, goals, parenting, health, sleep, sport, resilience, yoga, work, strengths, hope, and a host of other topics relating to well-being. And our amazing guests have educated and inspired us in so many topics relating to happiness. But do you know what I've realised? I realised in thinking about the past 12 months and our first year on air, that in that time, in 12 months and 39 episodes, we've never actually asked the question, what is happiness? And possibly more importantly, how do we get more of it?
Action to happiness, it's a movement. The goal is to create a kinder, more compassionate and connected society. So that's the big goal.
A big goal.
Which is, yeah, fairly vicious. But it's also what's key to it is it's about taking the best of the well-being literature and science and finding really practical action-based ways that people can integrate that into their life. So a bit like you might have like the five food groups, you have like minimum kind of expectations around physical activity in life. Well, what is it that we can do to look after our own happiness?
That is Dr. Jo Mitchell, Director of the Mind Room, clinical psychologist, and our first ever guest on the Potential Psychology Podcast. And she's talking about Action for Happiness, which is the global movement of people from all walks of life who are taking action in their personal lives, their communities, their workplaces, and their schools to help create a happier and more caring society. And I think that's a goal we could probably all get behind. But what is happiness? And what isn't it? And what does the science have to say? And how do we find happiness and create a happier and more caring society? Well, happiness is an intriguing concept. We know it when we feel it. We think we can recognise it in others. It's certainly something we all aspire to. But what is it really? The psychological and philosophical pursuit of happiness began in China and India and Greece nearly 2,500 years ago with philosophers such as Confucius, Buddha, Socrates, and Aristotle. And in different ways, they really sought to understand what makes the good life. And in the centuries since, great thinkers and philosophers such as Thomas Aquinas, William James, and then more recently, Viktor Frankl and Abraham Maslow have asked the same question: what does make us happy and what makes life good? And in the past 20 years, researchers have started to apply the scientific method, which is a systematic observation and measurement and experiment and testing of hypotheses, to that same happiness question. And much of this research has occurred under the umbrella of positive psychology, the field that we speak of often here on the podcast. And we have learned so much in those 20 years. Right now, research suggests that happiness is a combination of how satisfied you are with your life, for example, finding a feeling of meaning in your work or family life, and how good you feel on a day-to-day basis. So happiness is more than just feeling good in the moment. And in fact, when I talk about happiness to clients or groups, I prefer to use the term contentment because it, for me, it describes that feeling of being satisfied and feeling pretty good without necessarily having to feel really positive or joyful all the time, because that's just unrealistic.
It's often about moving back and forward between these experiences where well-being and happiness is produced. And happiness isn't just sitting on the positive side of the spectrum all the time. So happiness is actually facilitated by sometimes dipping into that unpleasantness, that uncomfortable state, but swinging back out of it as well.
That's Associate Professor Brock Bastian from the University of Melbourne with a little sneak peek into a conversation that I'll be having with him about emotions and resilience coming up in next season of the podcast. And happiness really isn't about feeling good all of the time. And according to the science, it isn't about having more money or a better house or a new car or new shoes. In fact, it's not about things at all. And I've struggled a little bit with this because I do have a thing for shoes, and I'm kind of sure that they do make me happy. It makes me happy to wear them and to look at them and to acquire them. So why is it that the science tells us that acquiring things doesn't actually make us happy? Well, it has to do with how we adapt over time. So I might absolutely get a boost to my happiness when I buy a new pair of shoes and when I wear them for the first few times or maybe even for the first year. But over time, I get used to those shoes or the feelings associated with those shoes. I adapt. And to really get that happiness boost again, I have to start looking for new shoes. And this happens with money as well. This process of adaptation, of getting used to kind of a certain level of happiness when we're looking for happiness in new things, new purchases, new acquisitions, things that are external to us. In fact, in 2010, research by the Nobel laureate psychologist and economist Daniel Kahneman showed that money increases our happiness until we get to about an annual income of $75,000 US. And after that, our emotional well-being doesn't increase any further with income. So our income might continue to increase, but our happiness plateaus. It seems that once we have enough money to be comfortable, to really fulfill our basic needs and to give us choices in the important areas of our life, that's all we need as far as happiness is concerned. So it's not really the money that's making us happy, it's the intangibles that the money facilitates up to a point. And beyond that, there's actually diminishing returns associated with extra money. There's no extra happiness. Another interesting question has to do with the extent to which we can control our level of happiness. Can we control it, or are some people just born happier than others? Well, research in this area tells us over the past 10 years that happiness does actually have a genetic component, that we're born wired for a certain degree of happiness. And the extent of this genetic component is still unclear. Research by Professor Michael Bartels at Vrije University in Amsterdam indicates that about 40% of our happiness has a genetic component. But genetics is a really complex field, and we do know, and we're increasingly understanding, that there's no one gene for happiness and that our genes and our environment really affect each other. There's a lot of interplay between the two. In addition, our circumstances, where we live, our money, which we've spoken about, education, health, our surroundings, and the people in our surroundings play a part, and they account or appear to account for about 10% of our happiness. So the good news is that while we may not be able to do much about the happiness that's wired into our genes, the 40% or so, and we can't always control our circumstances, that extra 10%, it means that maybe 50% of our day-to-day happiness is actually directly within our control.
It's Martine from Melbourne. What makes me happy? Hanging with my family, both my immediate family and my extended family, walking my dog, chilling on the couch with my husband. I love watching my kids play sport. I love watching my favourite football team. I love coffee with my girlfriends and champagne with my girlfriends. But most of all, I'm so happy to have been able to create a life that feels balanced, to be constantly learning, educating others, while still having time for my family, for my friends, for exercise, and for me.
So what can we do to enjoy more happiness in the true sense of the word? Well, we just heard from Martine Oglethorpe from The Modern Parent, and Martine has given us some hints as to what real happiness looks like and what we can do to obtain it. There are really many things that we can do that are entirely within our control. They're all simple, they're all free, they do require some intention. And as the Dalai Lama has said, happiness is not something that's ready-made. It comes from your own actions. Action for Happiness outlines some of the simple strategies that we can take to be happier in their 10 Keys to Happier Living, which you can download from the Action for Happiness website, and I'll pop in the show notes for this episode. And these are all based on a book of the same name by UK-based positive psychologist Vanessa King. So I'm going to hand over now to our listeners and our expert guests as they take us on a guided tour of the 10 Keys to Happier Living, the actions we can take and do take to boost our happiness. Here's Lizzie from Melbourne to kick us off.
Tucking my kids in at night with full tummies, clean jammies, knowing they are safe, loved and wanted makes me truly happy.
Hi, Alan. It's Kirsty. The thing that makes me happy is at the end of the day when my little boys wrap their arms around my neck and say, "Good night, Mum, I love you."
Hey, this is Jo Mitchell from The Mind Room, and spending time with my nieces and nephews makes me super happy.
Did you notice a bit of a theme in there? Positive psychology pioneer Dr. Chris Peterson once famously said, "Other people matter." And it is so true for our happiness. One of the simplest and easiest ways we can boost our happiness is to do things for others and connect with other people. Social connection, as it's called in psychology, is vital to human well-being. And our actions when it comes to other people need not be complicated or grand. We can smile at a stranger, have a conversation with a neighbour, we can take the time to connect with someone new, or just savour the moment of tucking kids into bed or spending time with family and friends. And the key in connecting with others is the sense of belonging that it gives us to a family, to a community, and the kind of sense of love and support that flows from that. So when we show others that we care, we build that sense of connection and belonging. It does them good and it does us good as well. Now, of course, other people drive us crazy sometimes too, and that's okay, that's normal. The trick for happiness when it comes to connecting with other people and relating to others is to focus less on what might be irritating, annoying, or upsetting in the moment, knowing that focusing on that stuff really isn't helping us, and paying attention to the good stuff.
Things that make me happy are little micro moments of joy, of calm, of nourishment dotted through my day. It might be seeing a red kite on the wing. It might be looking at the tiny hairs on my little boy's upper lip. It could be a snuggle. It might be ABBA, my dad's favorite band. Little micro moments of joy dotted through my day.
That's Susie Redding, psychologist, yoga teacher, author, and my guest in season two of the podcast. And what she's described so beautifully there is awareness and living life mindfully. And that's another of the 10 keys to happier living.
Being mindful is where we notice and bring awareness to our thoughts, our physiological sensations, our emotions, our senses, and the environment around us as it is happening in the present moment without judging it. So for me, mindfulness becomes a way of living. It becomes almost like a lifestyle practice. So each moment that I become aware of, I try to allow myself permission to be in it, to notice it, to breathe into it, to make room for it, and to allow it to be there as it is. So whether that be noticing my thoughts, becoming aware of my feelings, smelling my coffee, savouring the taste of my wine tonight, noticing the way my daughter's nose crinkles when she speaks. It's the permission for these experiences to be there as they are without trying to change them in any way. And I think that mindfulness practice can be formal or informal. The formal practice that I like to use and I use a lot with my clients is a guided meditation practice, which I completely encourage your listeners to contemplate and have a think about and try. There are some loads and loads of really good apps out there to help people along that journey. Or it can be really informal mindfulness, like I mentioned already. Formal is no better than informal, in my opinion. Being mindful is the important thing. Whatever shape or form that occurs in is almost irrelevant. Getting too fixed and rigid and inflexible goes against the process in itself. So I suppose simply mindfulness allows us to really acknowledge the moment. The moment is the only one we ever really truly have. You know, all we're guaranteed is this very moment that we're in. So I say mindfulness lets us notice that. So let's notice it.
And that was clinical psychologist Laura Braid, who I also interviewed in season two of the podcast. And what she's reminding of us is to really pay attention to the moment that we're in, the moments that we spend with our loved ones or in nature or even in the flow of getting a household or a work task done. So don't overthink it, just enjoy it for what it is without getting too caught up in your head about the whats and the whys and the whens. Just like Eileen Lenson, who I interviewed in season two about her book, Overcoming Adversity.
I am most successful at finding happiness when I'm with people I love and trust, when creating things with my hands, and when I have the opportunity to help reduce emotional struggles in others. That's when I'm able to ignore the noise in my head about what needs to be done tomorrow and what I should have done yesterday, and instead just enjoy the moment.
So doing things for others, connecting with people, and living life mindfully are three of the 10 keys for happier living. But what's next? Let's see what our experts and listeners have to say.
Hi there, my name's Noni and I'm from Melbourne. Riding my bike and spending time with my partner are two of the many things that make me happy.
Running makes me happy, even when I have to run really hard and I think it's going to hurt. I think that gives me more happiness at the end. Hope you have a great day, Ellen, and thanks for all the work you do with your podcast.
Yes, it's exercise that makes us happy. Now, I can hear you saying, nope, doesn't make me happy. But one of the fascinating things that I've learned about exercise in terms of our happiness and well-being is that it's not necessarily about going hard to get the endorphins going. That definitely has benefits for both our physical and our mental health. But just to feel good, just to boost our happiness, a short stroll can be enough to do the trick. In fact, it doesn't matter what kind of exercise you do. It can be cardio, strength training, Pilates, yoga, swimming, running, cycling, even gardening is great. Anything that gets us moving and paying attention to and looking after our bodies. And that's what helps us to feel good. Even better, if you can wrap exercise up with social connection by perhaps walking with a friend or a loved one, and being outdoors, you get an additional boost. So some research studies have shown that compared to an indoor workout, outdoor exercise makes us feel more revitalised, energetic and engaged, and less tense, angry and depressed. Now, during our summer months, I have been taking the kids out for a walk after dinner. And we generally start out with complaints about boredom, disagreements about which way to go, accidents, injuries, arguments, during which time I just do my best to be very zen, knowing that it doesn't take long before everyone's mood settles a bit, before we're having fun, we're staying in the moment, and we're feeling really good as we chat and we laugh and we explore and we get that happiness boost from moving. So if you're looking for a simple way to boost your mood and boost your happiness, find a form of exercise that works for you. Engage in it frequently, and particularly when you're really feeling a little down, a little anxious, a little stressed, pay attention afterwards to see how you feel and see if it helps. And if it does, do more of it.
Hi, I'm Jules from Stone Soup, and the thing that makes me happy is food, everything to do about food. So from gardening, growing my own veggies, to reading cookbooks, planning meals, doing the shopping. I love grocery shopping. I love going to the markets. And of course, I love hanging out in the kitchen and creating things. And of course, I love eating and sharing, you know, meals with my family and friends. And I love going to restaurants. So that's what makes me happy. Thanks for asking, Ellen.
That is Jules Clancy from Stone Soup, and we chatted last year about simplifying life starting in the kitchen. And Jules is introducing us to the next key to happier living. And no, it's not food. I know we're all a little disappointed about that. It's actually to do with Jules's approach to food and the way that she engages in her interest. So learning new things, trying and testing and engaging in our hobbies and our interests is a really proactive way to boost our happiness. It's the next key to happier living. Here's psychologist and neuropsychologist Desiree Dickerson to tell us a little more.
Learning grows neural connectivity, right? So from a very young age, from birth, from before birth even, you know, our brains are wired to learn. So from young children, they go from, you know, rolling to crawling to walking to running. They're just in this constant state of awesome learning. And they're growing, at their very young age, they're growing actual neurons and they're growing neural connectivity and their brains are blossoming, right? And then you fast forward, say, to high school years and adolescence and you're in school, you're learning constantly, you know, both in school and life, you know, you're learning how to navigate social interactions, other people, those awful, those complex emotional experiences that you just have to go through, but are awful. You know, that there's new learning in that. You know, you're connecting critical pathways from, say, your prefrontal cortex, that command center, the front of your brain, through to the rest of your brain. And there's massive learning and consequently new connectivity.
So it turns out that we're wired to learn. It's actually a critical part of our brain development over time and protection of our brain against decline. And continuous learning really helps us to stay curious and engaged in life, and that's how it contributes to our happiness. So we heard earlier from Jay and Andy from the Potential Psychology team, but I haven't mentioned what makes me happy yet. And it is absolutely all of the things that we've mentioned so far. So spending time with my loved ones, helping other people, exercise, being outdoors, staying mindful and in the moment. But one of the things that really makes me happy is learning. And that is why I love bringing you this podcast each week, because in every interview with a guest and in all of the research that I do to pull the content together for each episode, I'm learning. It's actually all very selfish because it makes me really happy. So if you're wondering how you can boost your happiness, you might like to try learning something new or really engaging in and savouring the hobbies, the interests that you have, the things that you do already or perhaps don't do enough of, particularly when you get stressed or busy. Re-engage in those things, enjoy them, cultivate curiosity and see how it makes you feel. And that brings me to the next key to happier living, and that's having goals and something to strive towards. And I'm a bit of a striver. I love a goal. And I do have what in psychology we call a high need for achievement. And that's something that we all differ in. And there's no right or wrong way to be when it comes to need for achievement. But the research does tell us that we do all need goals to motivate us, and that these need to be challenging enough to excite us, but also achievable. If we try to attempt the impossible or aim well beyond our capabilities, we stress ourselves out. But if we can choose meaningful and realistic goals that give our lives and our days a bit of direction and a sense of accomplishment and achievement when we attain them, then we're taking action to boost our happiness. Here's our listener, Nicole, who's telling us a bit about what goals mean to her.
Creating a plan and then nutting it out and just working hard and taking it step and zigzagging where I have to when I doesn't work and I have to try again, but then finally getting to the end and knowing that I've actioned the plan and I've achieved my goal, that gives me a really sense of deep happiness.
So if you need a happiness boost, you might like to try setting yourself a goal, even if it is to tidy out the hallway cupboard or to walk every day for a week. It doesn't matter how big or small it is. It just needs to be something that stretches you a little and gives you a sense of focus for your day. Okay, so what happens when it all comes crashing down? When life throws us overwhelming stress or trauma or failure or disaster? Because it does, doesn't it, sometimes? And no one's immune from challenge. And as Brock Bastian mentioned earlier, it's unrealistic to talk about happiness as the only possibility. There's always light and shade. And that's where finding ways to bounce back after challenge or difficulty or failure can actually contribute to our happiness. And as I mentioned before, we're going to talk about resilience and happiness in the first episode of next season of the podcast. But last year I discussed overcoming adversity with author Eileen Lenson and her book, Overcoming Adversity, Conquering Life's Challenges. And in that book, she gives us some really practical tips for managing our feelings and responding to both devastating events and everyday difficulties. Here's Eileen talking about the simple action we can take to persevere when faced with challenge, because that is one of our keys to happiness.
Perseverance is the refusal to give up, even when obstacles are encountered. Instead, one examines it, learns from it, and then figures out how to reevaluate it and move forward.
So as Eileen and I discussed in that episode, we can't always choose what happens to us, but we can choose how we react to what happens. And that's one of the skills of resilience that we can learn, and it does contribute to our happiness. And dealing with adversity, I think, is a really great example of how happiness doesn't always feel happy in the moment. In fact, you might be having a really difficult time of it and not feeling many positive emotions at all. But again, if you're taking steps to bounce back, or perhaps seeking professional help, or doing the sorts of things that Eileen talks about in her book and in that podcast episode, you're really contributing to your well-being. And you are building longer-term satisfaction and happiness, even if it's not feeling like it right then and there. So we have three keys to happier living that we haven't explored yet. And Carl from Bloke Psychology is going to introduce us to the next one.
Hi, Alan. It's Carl here from Bloke Psychology. What makes me happy is going for a surf or spending any time down the beach or the coast, taking my dog for a walk, spending time with my partner, going camping, or just having some really good food and wine or drink with some friends and family.
Carl is looking for what's good in life, and doing what he knows helps him to feel an array of positive emotions. And exposing ourselves to positive emotions and savouring them, which is really kind of coming back to being mindful in the moment, is linked to better performance of our tasks, broadening our perception and our perspectives in life, increasing our resilience, and even improving our physical health. And one of the really interesting and exciting areas of research in positive psychology for me is Professor Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build effect. And the idea of this is that when we feel positive emotions, and that extends beyond happiness to emotions such as joy and kindness and curiosity and optimism and hope and more, that these act as internal signals that encourage us to approach more, so to engage in our environment and explore novel ideas and meet new people and become more open to new actions and new behaviour. So when we feel positive emotions, we're really broadening our horizons and we're learning and we're growing as people. And it's the opposite effect, really, to feeling down or sad or angry or anxious. And those sorts of feelings tend to make us shut down and close up and to stick really closely to what we know. We don't try new things when we're in those sorts of moods. But if we can turn that around and try to both experience and savour our positive emotions, we enter a positive spiral, and that makes us grow, and it makes life easier, and it makes life more satisfying. So the tip here is to do as Carl does, and as many of our other guests and our listeners have described, and to really engage in the things that make you feel good. So listen to music, watch something funny, go outside, call a friend, go for a walk, even just ask yourself, what makes me happy? And do more of that. Enjoy and engage in your positive moments. It helps our mood, our perspective, and our growth.
Hey, Ellen. This is James Garrett. How are you? What makes me happy is being my authentic self. And it's a hard one because it's hard to be all of us out there because I think it risks the feeling of getting rejected. Worry, at least I do, about people, that all of us is not okay or something. So anyway, that's the thing that makes me the most happy. I know I'm in flow and I'm at my deepest, most authentic, most passionate self. Hope that helps.
That is psychologist and performance and productivity expert James Garrett. Now, in season two of the podcast, James and I discussed how to design your mind for peak productivity and creativity. And since then, James has embarked on what he calls the Deep Change Project, which is a year-long adventure in brain hacking. And he's using science and some of the new exciting biofeedback tools and brain technology to understand more about who he is and how he can be the best version of himself. And what's interesting is that one of his discoveries so far is that being authentic and comfortable with who he is really contributes to his happiness. It's something that makes him happy, and that is our second to last key to happier living. It's acceptance and kindness towards ourselves. And recently on the podcast, psychologist Matthew Condy and I talked about the notion of self-compassion and the role that being kinder to ourselves when things go wrong and learning to accept ourselves as we are rather than constantly comparing ourselves to who we think we should be plays in our happiness and our well-being and our resilience. So to be happier in the short term and in the longer term, be as kind to yourself as you are to others. See your mistakes as opportunities to learn. Notice the things that you do well. Acknowledge them rather than dismiss them. And remind yourself that you're human, that we're all human, and no human is perfect.
Self-esteem, on the one hand, is a judgment about who you are as a person and as a value. So in psychology, we talk about people having, you know, high self-esteem, low self-esteem, unhealthy, healthy, good, bad. They're judgments. And they're contingent on rewards from the environment and relationships. My worth is defined by how you feed back and reinforce what I do well or what I don't do well. Whereas self-compassion, it's not evaluative, it's not contingent, and it's unconditional, and it's potentially more static across time. And within self-compassion, there's this notion of self-talk, the narrative that we have of ourselves and how we describe and define ourselves. So if we're highly self-critical, then that's going to have an impact on our self-worth, and we know that. And regardless of what context, whether it be attachment, whether it be performance, whether it be organizational education, self-talk and the mindset that we have has an impact on our feelings and our behaviors.
So we have come almost to the end of our exploration of happiness, what it is, what it isn't, and the simple things that we can all do to create more of it. And we've heard from some of our listeners and many of our past guests, as well as to the podcast team, to become a little happier together. And I've introduced you to Action to Happiness's 10 Keys to Happier Living. And I've put the links to the 10 Keys document, as well as plenty of the other resources that I've used in putting this episode together, to give you a bit more detail if you're interested in exploring further. And that's all in the show notes for this episode. But there's one key left, and that's meaning and purpose, and being part of something bigger than ourselves. So we know that people who have meaning and purpose in their lives are happier, feel more in control, and get more out of what they do each day. And they also experience less stress, less anxiety, and less depression. But what is meaning, and where do you find it? Well, that's a pretty big question, and the answer to it actually varies for each of us. So you might derive meaning from doing a job that makes a difference to others, or from your religious or spiritual beliefs, or from your family, or from being actively involved in your community, or from helping at the local footy club. There's no one right way to feel a sense of meaning and purpose. And in fact, the key is just being part of something bigger and experiencing the joy and the satisfaction that that brings. And it's my hope that being part of the Potential Psychology community, listening into the podcast, perhaps sharing the science of human behaviour, helps to create a sense of meaning and purpose, perhaps for you and certainly for me. It's why I do what I do. And I want to really thank you, as I close on this special episode, for listening and for being part of that. And before I go, I'm going to ask you a little favour. I'd love you to share this episode with others if you think that they might benefit from understanding a little more about the science of happiness and well-being and the 10 keys to happier living. And I'm going to leave you with a message from Dr. Joe Sweeney, a past guest on the podcast, because I feel that his message really encapsulates what it means to be fully happy. Thank you for listening. I'll see you in a few weeks for the launch of season 5 of the Potential Psychology podcast. And here's Dr. Joe.
I'm very blessed. When this question was asked to me, I thought about it for a short while and then realised every single waking moment of my life and quite a bit of my sleeping moments are joyful. Even in the tough times, even in the times when I'm anxious or when things aren't going right or when I'm in pain, I do know that that is a learning experience, that that is something I'm going to come out of with a greater understanding of myself and of the world around me. But the real issue here is that every moment of existence for me is joyful. It's miraculous is probably a better way of describing it. Now, I'm not religious and I'm not even very spiritual, but I do find it mind-blowing that the universe would create consciousness in me, in you, in all of us, consciousness that can look upon the universe and understand it and make sense of it, at least little parts of it. And that is just mind-blowing. The fact that we are conscious is just, it is truly miraculous. And for that, I am absolutely incredibly grateful. And that's what brings me joy. So literally every single waking moment, every single sleeping moment, every interaction, every book I read, every story I tell, every laugh I hear, and every tear I shed, that's joyful. Thank you.